Beloved Book One, once a Taoist, happening to pass by Hayakujo's monastery, asked, "Is there anything in the world more marvelous than the forces of nature?" Hayakujo replied, "There is." "And what is that?" the Taoist inquired. Hayakujo said, "The power of comprehending those natural forces." The visitor asked, "Is cosmic vitality the Tao?" Hayakujo responded, "Cosmic vitality is cosmic vitality. The Tao is the Tao." The Taoist said, "If so, they must be two different things." Hayakujo said, "That which knows does not proceed from two different persons." The exasperated Taoist replied, "What is wrong and what is right?" Hayakujo replied, "Wrong is the mind that attends to externals. Right is the mind that brings externals under control."
Manisa, listening to these dialogues and anecdotes, the more important thing should not be forgotten. This is not a school or a university. You are not here learning any knowledge. You are being transformed, awakened. All these sutras are meant only to wake you up, to catch your attention, which is vibrating continuously, moving around thousand things, to make it absolutely here is the whole purpose of all these sutras. This is possible only if you are only listening and not interpreting. Listening and not making judgments. Listening and not saying, yes, this is right. No, this is not right. You don't have to say anything. That is not the point of the whole process. The point is that you can be just a listener without any judgment. That prepares you for your meditation. Manisha has brought these dialogues. Once a Taoist, in the first place, nobody can be a Taoist. Tao is not a religion, neither a philosophy. It is simply the purest understanding of meditation, where everything disappears. Including you, then what remains is Tao. Buddha will call it Dhamma. You can call it truth, consciousness, beauty, but all these words denote to one oceanic feeling of awareness, in which you are not separate from the cosmos. But the difficulty with man is he makes everything into an ism. So when Lao Tzu died, people started making an ism. And his whole life he was teaching that there is no ism, no philosophy, no theory. You have to drop all these mind activities. You have to attain to a silent and empty space. That is Tao. Nobody can be a Taoist, so from the very beginning we know that the questions are going to be wrong. Of course, you can answer rightly to wrong questions, and that's what Hayakuju is going to do. Once a Taoist happening to pass by Hayakujo's monastery asked, is there anything in the world more marvelous then the forces of nature. Hayakkaju replied, there is. But being a follower of a certain dogma, his eyes are as blind as any Hindu, any Mohammedan, any Christian's eyes are. He could not understand that there can be anything more marvelous than the forces of nature. And he is forgetting himself completely. Anybody could have said, the seer is far more marvelous than the seen. The knower is more marvelous than the known. Because the known is just an object. The knower shows a different quality of consciousness. He is alive, not only alive, but consciously alive. And what is that? The Taoist inquired. Hayakkaju said, the power of comprehending those natural forces. What I have said to you, the seer, the witness, the watcher, that's what Hayakkaju is calling the power of comprehending the natural forces. That is more marvelous. That is the ultimate splendor. The visitor asked, is cosmic vitality the Tao? Hayakkaju responded, cosmic vitality is cosmic vitality. The Tao is Tao. The Taoist said, if so, there must be two different things. Hayakkaju said, that which knows does not proceed from two different persons. The exasperated Taoist replied, what is wrong and what is right? Hayakkaju replied, wrong is the mind that attends to externals, right is the mind that brings externals under control. In a more contemporary way, few things have to be noted. First, the visitor is not intrinsically concerned, urgently concerned with what he is asking. His questions are scattered. They are not in a one sequence. He gets one answer, drops it, as if he has understood. But his next question has no relationship with the first. If he has understood, there was not going to be another question. One question is enough for the man of intelligence. And if the intelligence is ultimate and meditative, not even one question is needed. Nothing is said and everything is heard in the empty heart of the disciple. But he is not a disciple, just a visitor, a curiosity monger. People who simply go on collecting knowledge from different sources and then they brag as if they know all these things. You can see this. His interest is not at all to understand what he is asking. He asks, what is more marvelous in existence than natural forces? Hayakuju's answer is absolutely perfect. It is the seer who comprehends, who witnesses the existence. Just by the seer nature of witnessing, it is higher than the witnessed. If he has understood the point, there was no more to ask. But he went on asking. The visitor asked, is cosmic vitality the Tao? Now this has no connection with the first question. This shows that he has collected the answer, is not being bothered what it means. Just words, and now he will repeat those words to anyone as if they are his own. And he is in a hurry to ask another question. The first is not dissolved yet. With the first dissolving, he will also dissolve. On the path, there are not answers. Simply disappearing of the questions. What master says makes the question disappear, makes the question irrelevant, out of context, meaningless. He clears the space so you can see also the same clarity that is his own. He wants to share his clarity and he removes your questions by answers. He is not interested either in answers or in questions. He answers only just to remove the question. But if a person is not a person on the path of seeking, it does not matter. He may have removed one question aside, he brings another. He does not see the point. The visitor asked, is cosmic vitality the Tao? Neither he knows cosmic vitality, nor he knows Tao. This is where intellectuals get lost, in words And words are far more thicker forests than you can find anywhere else. Apparently, it seems to be perfectly right to ask a question, is cosmic vitality the ultimate life, the same as the Tao? But the question is arising out of curiosity, not out of inquiry. It does not matter if you don't answer. What I mean by urgency is, it matters that we should find our life source, the cosmic vitality. Hayakujo responded, cosmic vitality is cosmic vitality. The Tao is the Tao. Now, immediately in any ordinary mind, the question will arise, are they two? Is the path and the goal two? The path is the path, the goal is the goal, but they are not two. The path is only the extension of the goal. The goal is only the end point of the path. Hayakuju is not saying they are two. He is simply saying the path is the path and the goal is the goal. And don't make any decisions before you have followed the path. At the end point of the path, you will find the goal. And then suddenly you will realize their absolute oneness. The Taoist said, if so, there must be two different things. A very ordinary mediocre mind can say that, and before a master one has to think twice what he is asking. Hayakujo said, that which knows does not proceed from two different persons. You can follow only one path. There may be many paths, just like a mountain peak. You can climb it from one side or the other side, and there can be thousand paths moving to the ultimate peak. But as paths, they are different from other paths. Some path may be moving through a desert, and some paths should be moving through less green trees. As paths, they are different. But when they will reach to the end, there will be an explosion of understanding that everything leads to the ultimate. Some take a little more time, some take a little less time. Some are arduous, some are very relaxed. It is your choice. Move from anywhere towards your life source. You will reach to the same point that any Buddha has ever reached. The ultimate experience is not either yours or mine. It is simply the ultimate experience of all consciousnesses who move towards the inner source. The exasperated Taoist replied, he was exasperated because he could not understand what is being said. What is wrong and what is right? He thought it is better to ask a very simple question and then see what this man answers. What is wrong and what is right? Nothing can be more simple apparently. But deep down, it is one of the most significant questions. Hayakujo replied, wrong is the mind that attends to externals, mind in subjugation, mind in slavery to objects. That is wrong. And when you change the whole status and mind is no more under the control of objective world but becomes a master in his own right, it is right. Ordinarily, we think that right and wrong are judgments. Somebody is doing something and you feel it is not right or it is right. In our common understanding, right and wrong have become parts of our judgmental approach. But to those who know, to those who have arrived, right and wrong have a totally different meaning. Mind can function as a master . Mind can function as a slave. Now, ordinarily, nobody thinks right and wrong has something to do with this. But basically, mind in slavery of objective world is wrong. Then whatever you do is wrong. And when the mind is freed from objective slavery, it becomes empty. That empty mind becomes a sovereign, a master. It is no more a slave. That is the only right. Then out of this situation, whatever arises, out of this space, whatever responses are produced, they are right. So right is not a judgmental question, It is a question where you are. What is your state? Is your consciousness the master? Or is easily enslaved by anything? I am reminded of a Sufi master, Junaid. He was a very simple man and would not have become world famous. He became world famous because of Al-Hillaz Mansur. His disciple was crucified. He used to say, the question of right and wrong is the question concerning your consciousness. If you are conscious, then whatever you do is bound to be right. If you are unconscious, then whatever you do is wrong. The world may appreciate it differently. For example, a man may donate, give charities, and everybody will say, how nice, how great, how righteous, how virtuous is this man. But if you look into his mind, he is giving all these charities in order to make a special place in God's bank. So when he reaches the pearly gates, he should be welcomed with angels. And he will have all the comforts. And what he is giving is nothing to what he is exploiting. Perhaps 1%, and he becomes a great virtuous man. And 99% he is exploiting the same people. Unless one is conscious, absolutely a pillar of consciousness, it is very difficult to do the right, because you are not right. How flowers of right can arise out of you? So the question to the authentic master changes the whole area. It is not your activity. It is your consciousness. What you do is irrelevant. From where comes that doing? Consciousness or unconsciousness? That is the decisive factor. Zen has brought a totally different outlook. It is not a morality. It does not emphasize on your actions, it emphasizes on you. You are doing right things for wrong reasons. That will not make them right. Somebody is afraid of hell, and out of fear, he goes every Sunday to the church. It is a bother listening to the priest, the same Old Testament and the same old garbage which he has listened so many times. So most of the churchgoers simply have a good morning sleep in the churches. It is a very religious sleep. A man used to snore in a church. The bishop was worried. He took the man aside and told him that I am not against sleeping, and sleeping is not any irreligious activity, but snoring is a little too much. The man asked, is snoring irreligious? He said, no, I'm not saying that snoring is irreligious. I'm simply saying that because of your snoring, the whole congregation cannot sleep. And that creates many difficult problems. I have only 3 sermons, which I have been given my whole life. Nobody listens. What is the point to be original and to find new material? And nobody has ever objected. That is a absolute proof that nobody has ever listened. They were all fast asleep. And it is good for me to unnecessary trouble. And in fact, those 3 sermons are also not made by me. Those are the 3 sermons of the previous preacher who has retired. He has given me and told me that these are enough, don't bother to make much. The whole congregation comes to the church to have a good morning sleep. Just don't let anybody snore, and you are the most prominent member of the church. Snoring is killing me. If people start listening, it will not be long, it will be only 3 weeks that they will come to know that this fellow has been repeating the same record. So please, just for God's sake,
sleep as deep as you can, but don't snore. All the religions have been action-oriented. Don't do this, don't do that. They are all commandments. And the question is not of your doing, the question is of your being. Be in a conscious state, then do whatever comes out of your spontaneity, and it is right. If it does not come as a spontaneous, conscious response, then even if the whole world says it is good, it is not good. The ultimate criterion is not the action. The ultimate criterion is the origin. The mind is capable of doing both. It can be a slave as it is to millions of people. Very rarely mind is completely free from objects, desires, anger, and is just a simple empty space, it has become no mind. So we can say it in this way: if you act through mind, it is wrong. If you act through no mind, it is right. A haiku by Basu. Birth of art, song of rice planters, chorus from nowhere. If you are utterly silent, then everything that happens in that silence takes a new color. It becomes the birth of very art, song of rice planters. It is not much of a music. Poor rice planters, just to keep them engaged, are singing in chorus. But a man of silence immediately makes or gives a glamour to the ordinary stones. Song of rice planters, chorus from nowhere. As far as he is concerned, he is utterly silent. So he wonders from where this chorus is coming. The whole existence has become a chorus. A beautiful symphony. Our lives can be lived as music, as poetry, as art, as mystics. And those are the right ways to live our lives. Right, because to live those styles, you will have to find your origin first. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, what is the urge to understand?" Manisha, the urge to understand comes from your very nature. The mystery of existence wants you to become a shareholder. The mystery of existence does not want to stand outside, but come inside the temple. It is too hot outside, it is perfectly cool inside. And the urge of understanding is absolutely a part of intelligence. The intelligence wants to know who is there within me, from where come my love, my tears, my laughter. One does not want to remain ignorant of his own house. The urge to understand is the only hope for man. If there is no urge to understand, there will not be any mysticism, and there will not be any poetry, there will not be any music, there will not be any dance, there will be only a deep sadness, suicidal sadness. That what is the point of going on living? Because the urge to understand the meaning of life is missing. But fortunately, the urge is not something to be learned from somebody else. The urge is there in you. You may have repressed it as much as you want, but in the right season, in the right time, in the right moment, if you encounter a man who knows, suddenly the urge will surface. That is one of the criterions of meeting a master. People have asked me again and again, how to decide that we have met the master? If meeting a man, you suddenly feel that you would also like to be in the same space, in the same joy, In the same song, the urge to understand has arisen. This urge makes you a disciple. And a disciple is just the beginning of a master. The disciple is the seed and the master is the flowers. Now it is Ananda's time. Olga Kovalevsky is chatting to her friend Rosa over a cup of coffee. "If you ask me," says Olga, "the television is a stupid invention." "Why is that?" asks Rosa, munching on a cookie. "Well," says Olga, "all it is crime or sex." "Really?" replies Rosa. "I'm sick of it," says Olga. "Whenever I switch the TV on at night, all I see is violence." "Then why don't you switch it off?" suggests Rosa. "Well, if I do that," replies Olga, "then Kovalevsky wants to have sex." Gorgeous Gloria goes to see Robin Meany, the soap business agent, and asks him to see her act. Gloria places a large orange on the floor and then begins to do a sensational strip to music. When she is completely naked and the music reaches its climax, Gloria suddenly sinks to the floor, legs wide apart on top of the orange. And when she rises again, the orange has disappeared. "That is fantastic," cries Robin, "a real knockout. I can get you a job in Paris nightclub starting tomorrow." "No, not Paris," says Gloria nervously. So Robin gets her a job in Berlin instead. 2 weeks later, Robin calls Gloria on the phone. "Good news," he says, "I have bookings for you in Hamburg, Rome, Cairo and Paris." "No, not Paris," says Gloria. "What the hell is the matter with Paris?" "For Christ's sake," snaps Robin. "Well, you see," says Gloria, "in Paris, my mother does the same act with a watermelon." Kovalevsky and Zebrisky are walking down the street in New York, and Zebrisky is saying how much he hates Italians. "Greasy wops," He grumbles, always making a noise and talk about stupid. I wish they would all go back to Italy. In the middle of this outburst, the two Polaks walk around a corner. They run smack into old Luigi, who is playing loudly on a violin with a little monkey dancing beside him. Luigi really looks the part. He is dressed in an old greasy spaghetti stained coat. He has a gold earring in one of his ears, and he is playing his violin and singing in Italian at the top of his voice. Kowalski is astonished when he sees Zabriskie pull out his purse and put a dollar bill in the little monkey's outstretched cap. "Why did you do that?" asks Kowalski. "When they have walked on, I thought you hated Italians." "I do," admits Zabriskie, "but they are so cute when they are young." Close your eyes, feel your body to be completely frozen. Gather your all consciousness as an arrow in search of the center of your being. Go inwards. With no fear, it is your own territory. At the very end of your arrow, you will find yourself as a Buddha, fully awakened. This is the first step. Once you have become the Buddha completely, the second step is to go beyond. Let even the Buddha disappear. Only silence and an infinite sky remains. This is your home. You are no more. But you have found the home. The dewdrop has disappeared into the ocean. Thousands of flower blossom suddenly from nowhere. The music is heard. You find all around you a pulsating life energy, almost in a dance, and you are part of it. Gather as many flowers and fragrances as possible. Gather the awareness that has arisen in you. Because you have to carry your awareness moment to moment in your daily life, waking or asleep. This is the only transformation I know of. Which makes the dewdrop the ocean, or vice versa. Which makes the ocean disappear into the dewdrop. To make it more clear, Nivedana, relax. Just watch. The body is not you. The mind is not you. You are simply a witness. No judgment, no evaluation, but a pure, silent witnessing like a mirror. This is your Buddhahood. There is no greater joy in existence than to be a Buddha. And there is no greater beauty, no greater grace, no greater blessing than to be a Buddha. Here life comes in all its colors, the whole rainbow . The evening was already beautiful. But your witnessing has made it a great splendor, a majestic moment. It has given to it a magical quality. Soon Nivedana will be calling you back. Bring all these qualities with you. Don't leave them behind. Nivedana. Slowly, gracefully, come back, renewed by the process, refreshed by the process, sit down for a few moments like a Buddha. I am using the word like so that you don't freak out. Otherwise, you are the Buddha. Okay, Manisha.
Yes, Bhagwan.
Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes.
Yeah.